And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's really good to be with you today. I think the low temperature this morning driving in was 74 degrees. I could get used to that, but it's not going to stay 74 a day. It's probably going to go up about, 20 degrees higher than that. All right. I read this post by Bill Sardi, and I'm going to read it to you. Oh, my word. If you just even listen to just a little bit of what I'm telling you this morning or what I read to you or what I share with you, man, there's some gems in here, folks. There are some gems. And I realize you may not be in a position in your life right now to really consider this, but, you know, you might want to pay attention to this information. I don't have the article in front of me, but 2 days ago I was reading it in the morning before I left for work. And in this particular article, it was discussing the use of chemotherapy to treat cancer, saying that they really think it's causing more harm than good. Because what you're doing is you're setting the body up for just massive invasion of cancer and tumors later after you do it. And I'm trying to think, have I ever heard a patient or a person come to see me and say, now my oncologist gave me full disclosure. They told me straight up front that this would probably help defeat the cancer initially, but it was going to come back with a vengeance or destroy me later. No, I've never heard that before. All right, here's the title of the article right here. Listen to it carefully. Researchers starve cancer stem cells out of existence using a simple 1-2 punch could be up to 100 times better than drugs at killing cancer stem cells. I don't know what that means, 100 times better, but it sounds really good. I think this is the other title of the article right here from the published study. Doctors knock out cancer stem cells with a common antibiotic, and they finish off the treatment-resistant stem cells with vitamin C. There's your two punchline. There's your 1-2 punch right there, an antibiotic and vitamin C. It says a common problem with modern cancer treatment is that even if 100% of the cancer cells are eradicated at the tumor sites and in the blood circulation, a small cadre of cancer stem cells may give rise to recurrence months to years later. Oncologists are never quite sure that they have cured this dreaded disease. Failure to kill cancer stem cells is likened to killing all the weeds in the garden, but never pulling out their roots. This comes from the Ludwig Center from Stanford Medicine. But now, in a groundbreaking animal experiment, cancer researchers in Italy and the United Kingdom report that they have killed cancer stem cells not with a gene-targeted drug that cost $180,000 or an engineered monoclonal antibody which could cost $250,000, but they used a common antibiotic plus vitamin C. I don't know why I feel like this is so laughable. It's laughable because it's so simple. The results are astounding. Antibiotics plus vitamin C could be up to 100 times more effective than drugs at killing cancer cells without the side effects, says a news report. That comes from the Daily Mail, June 9, 2017. The antibiotic doxycycline, an analog of tetracycline, which I'm certain that you have probably heard of an antibiotic called tetracycline. This is an FDA-approved and commonly used to quell infections such as acne. So if you've got a kid with acne, maybe they've been given doxycycline by the dermatologist. Doxycycline kills cancer stem cells by interfering with cellular compartments called mitochondria, where oxygen is turned into energy. You know, there may be a gem just in that sentence right there. Anything that interferes with mitochondria generating energy for the cancer cells, that might be something worth talking about. It goes on to say that doxycycline demonstrably suppresses production of key DNA proteins and cellular energy components by 35-fold. That's another number that's probably so high it's hard to comprehend. Of course, I know I'm being redundant. You've already heard all this information from your cancer doctors and from your physicians, so this is the icing on the cake. I'm just stirring up your mind by way of remembrance. It goes on to write that in the article, however, cancer stem cells are cunningly resistant to treatment. Some cancer stem cells exposed to the antibiotic will convert to utilizing sugar for energy, a process called glycolysis, and they don't want to do that. Vitamin C at blood concentrations that can be achieved with vitamin C pills, that means we don't need to inject it, we don't need infusion, we don't need to travel to Mexico, you can just take vitamin C pills, which was then employed to selectively interfere with glycolysis in the final and complete eradication of the treatment-resistant cancer stem cells. To me, that's what's so fascinating about this, is they're going against cancer stem cells. Those are the ones that are most resistant to treatment. The combined treatment effectively starves the cancer stem cell population, says lead researcher Michael Lasanti at the University of Salford in Greater Manchester, UK. That comes from the journal OncoTarget, June 9th, 2017. Dr. Lasanti and colleagues explain in their report, doxycycline-treated cancer stem cells, and that's the antibiotic they use, not chemotherapy, but an antibiotic, they are 4 to 10-fold more vulnerable to vitamin C-induced cancer death. Doxycycline drives remaining live stem cells from oxygen to sugar metabolism, and megadose vitamin C finishes them off. Folks, I can't make this up. The blood concentration of vitamin C required to kill off cancer stem cells is at 100 to 250 micromoles, and this is achievable orally. This comes from the Puerto Rico Health Science Journal, March 2008. Megadose vitamin C generates transient... Now listen to this. Let me start over here. This is another gem I want you to get, at least something I think of. Mega dose vitamin C generates transient hydrogen peroxide. The chemical signal would be H2O2. And in the body, you just convert it into the non-toxic H2O, which is water. Let me read that once again. Megadose vitamin C generates transient hydrogen peroxide. I wonder if hydrogen peroxide could play a role in killing cancer cells. That might be food for thought today. They go on to write that this novel yet simple treatment exploits metabolic vulnerabilities in cancer stem cells. Folks, what we have been using for the last 50 years, it ain't working. It's time to rethink this. So, this novel yet simple treatment exploits metabolic vulnerabilities in cancer stem cells. It has been previously been reported that the cure rate for infection... This is another gem right here. You're probably going to think I'm making this up. This is just too cool. It has been previously reported that the cure rate for infections treated with an antibiotic... They're 5 times higher when vitamin C is used as a co-treatment. Have you ever heard that before? When a doctor prescribes an antibiotic to you, does he say, now this will be 5 times more effective, and the cure rate's going to be 5 times higher if we take vitamin C along with it? You ever heard that before? This comes from the Australian New Zealand Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, 2009. It goes on to say in the article, and I love research, especially the ones that tell the truth, it is known that vitamin C potentiates antibiotics. This comes from the Brazilian Archives of Biology Technology, 2005. As Dr. Lasanti explains, in this striking experiment, the antibiotic plus vitamin C didn't work additively, meaning 1 plus 1 equals 2, but rather synergistically. He says 1 plus 1 equals 100. So a synergistic effect is when you take them singly, They may have some effect, but when you take them together, oh my word, they're 100 times more effective. Sadly, this Nobel Prize quality research to the highbrow scientific community may not give it much consideration. What they're saying is, just because this is super duper effective doesn't mean anybody's going to pay attention to it. I'll let you figure out the reason why. The National Institutes of Health should be calling for a worldwide conference and prioritizing grants for this type of fast-track research. This kind of simple cure would certainly disrupt the research and the develop pipeline of many pharmaceutical companies as well. Scientific recognition or not, Dr. Linsanti's research isn't going to be pushed into obscurity. Dr. Linsanti previously reported that vitamin C and certain herbal extracts are effective cancer stem cell inhibitors. You tell me, do you like this information? I'm just eating this up like it's candy. According to the journal Oncotarget, Onco, you probably heard the word oncologist, that would be a cancer treatment doctor, March the 28th, 2017, it says more studies are in publication, are in the publication pipeline and will soon follow. The question arises a decade from now, if it does, will this promising cancer treatment be forgotten and ignored and never implemented by practicing oncologists? That's a good question. Since 80% of the income of private practice oncologists is generated by billing for in-office chemotherapy infusions. 80%? The welcome mat for this type of simple and inexpensive therapy is not likely to be used. I'll let you decide what that means. It also needs to be noted that natural molecules such as carvacol, which is an extract from oil of oregano, and thymol oil, which comes from thyme, they are considered close mimics of doxycycline. That comes from the Journal of Dairy Science, February 2017. And from the International Journal of Pharmaceuticals, February 10, 2016, the blood level of the vitamin to achieve a cancer stem cell killing effect is exceeded by taking 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C 4 times a day at equal intervals. There's your dose. We got it. The problem solved. Very, very interesting. If you want to join me on the radio this morning, ask me a question, please have at it. The phone line is officially open. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. You know, all I'm really doing is I'm just giving you information. You decide what you want to do with it. Good morning, and thank you for your phone call.
Yes, good morning. My question is in regards to menopause. And I somehow thought a good idea was taking bioidentical hormone cream. And I did so for about 10 months. And... after some lab work, come to find out it the progesterone that they had me taking increased my blood sugar. My A1C went from 4.8 to 5.9, and I hadn't changed my diet. So, and I asked them about that, and they said, yes, that could actually happen. And
they told you that after the fact, right?
Exactly. And the ratio they had me on was 1.5 estrogens. They said duo estrogens to 40 progesterone to 3 testosterone. And over the year's time, or it was about 10 months, my testosterone only went from 17 to 28. And so I want to get off of it. And I want to know what naturally I can do. I know tribulus is one thing, and maybe ashwagandha root.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your What is your thoughts on that?
I wish I'd been smart enough to say ashwagandha, but you beat me to it. let me ask you a question. Do you still have your uterus and your ovaries?
Yes.
Do you have your adrenal
glands? Yes. The only thing I've had done is an ablation, an endometrial ablation.
And that would be probably from excess estrogen. Anyway,
I had some heavy bleeding. Mm-hmm.
Which, and you know what? I don't know any man that's ever experienced heavy vaginal bleeding. So, I mean, what am I supposed to say?
No.
I don't even have a way to completely, totally sympathize with you, but I believe everything that you're telling me. Can I make just a couple of comments before I really get into the meat of the matter? Or the heart of the matter? When they say bioidentical hormones, a lot of times what they're doing is they're saying these are completely natural, but if you look into it, there's no such thing as a hormone tree or a hormone plant that's found in nature. It just doesn't exist. Yes, they may be able to take the Mexican wild yam, or they may be able to take soybeans or sweet potatoes, but they have to chemically convert them like about 24, 25, 26 chemical reactions. There's just no such thing as natural progesterone that grows on a tree. The only source of natural progesterone would be your ovaries and your adrenal glands. And so what happens is when they give you a bioidentical hormone called progesterone, your body's probably saying to itself, what are we going to do with this stuff? And I understand what the quandary is, because a woman could go to a doctor and say, you know what, I feel like I'm very hormonal, I feel like I'm not producing hormones, I just feel bad, and they can flood their bodies with mega doses of estrogen, bioidentical progesterone, and testosterone, and momentarily a person can feel really good. Just like, insulin's a hormone also, and so if a person has diabetes, you can go to any doctor that you want, and they can say, hey, we've got a solution for this. We are going to put you on an insulin pump, or we're going to give you infusions of insulin at the Diabetes Renewal Center, or we're going to do all these techniques, and momentarily you'll feel good, but they don't tell you that there's a downside of this. So when they give a whole lot of progesterone like that, your body can convert that downstream into a hormone called cortisol. And when cortisol becomes elevated, what does it do? It starts converting your muscles and tissues into blood sugar, which you probably found that out, or that's the answer to the mystery right here. And so your body is converting progesterone.
Which causes weight gain.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes. Well, I mean, your body has two. Body has two choices. You break down your muscles. You convert protein into sugar, and the body says, "Oh my goodness, this is the greatest thing. Let's burn it for energy." Well, it's fine if it does that, I guess. But what if your body can't burn up all that extra sugar? It's got no choice. It's got to store it in the liver in the form of glycogen, which makes your liver massively sluggish and enlarged. It's called fatty liver. Or it converts it into long-term storage, which is called body fat. And so there's what's happening right there. Now, let me talk about the good stuff just for a second. I know this is a radical idea, but sometimes I would rather try to feed and nourish the glands and tissues in such a way where they can actually make hormones on their own. Because if you can make the right amount of hormones, and maybe what I want to say is the other half of this equation. You know how we talked about the liver just a little while ago? I really am convinced the more that I study and that I observed, I don't think anybody else has a job quite like mine. I get to have fun pretty much all day long every day. Because I get to examine people and I go, oh, was that a little bit swollen and tender down there in your liver? And, you know, I think a woman tried to kick me in the head yesterday when I barely touched her liver. I'm joking, just in case she's listening. But, you know, it caught her off guard. She probably had no idea that her bile duct and her gallbladder was so swollen and so inflamed. And she was saying, I just want to know what this pain is right here. And when I touched her bile duct, I think I saw her eyes enlarge about 20 times normal for a split second because it was so inflamed and so painful. But the liver, oh my goodness, it has almost everything to do with hormone balance. I've seen a number of women that was the only thing I ever had to do was just improve the function of the liver. And so don't take what I'm saying the wrong way, but if you took bioidentical hormones and it may have caused some hormonal problems that you didn't account for, then my mind goes toward maybe the liver's just a little bit clogged up. Maybe it's just a little bit inflamed. Maybe it just can't work as efficiently as what you'd like it to. It'd be like if you had a car that had a V8 engine and only one cylinder worked. Well, that might be fine for cruising around the parking lot of Target or Walmart or, you know, Drug Emporium. But what if you need to get somewhere really, really efficiently at 70 miles an hour? Well, it just may not be enough to do all that. And that's what your liver is also.
Yeah.
A study that I read the other day said that 70% of the liver could be basically dead, non-functioning. But liver enzyme tests still can come back normal. So what does that tell you? That tells you it has... But anyway,
I would look
to your liver, and I would say that you probably have a little bit of a hair trigger on cortisol, adrenaline, and insulin. Now, as a general rule, cortisol, which is what your body's converting the progesterone into, it's not staying progesterone. It's just not. Your body's breaking it down into cortisol. But when it does that...
I believe that.
You're not going to like what I'm going to tell you next, but I'm going to tell you the truth because I love you.
Yeah.
But there is a hormone produced by your pituitary. It's called oxytocin. So one example would be when you give birth to a beautiful, gorgeous baby, oxytocin's released. And when you nurse a baby, oxytocin stimulates your milk to let down. And it's called the love hormone or the bonding hormone. If you've ever seen a cow push her newborn baby calf away and say, "I want nothing to do with you," evidently, they've got a messed up oxytocin pathway right there. Because in nature, you know, if a cat gives birth to kittens, she instantly starts caressing them and licking them. She also eats the placenta really quick, which I've seen so many women have horrible, horrible postpartum depression, and they were terrified at their next pregnancy because they felt like they couldn't contend and deal with it if they had to deal with those symptoms again. You know what the solution was? Just take the placenta.
What?
All you do is just take a food dehydrator, cut up the placenta, dry it out, grind it up, and put it in capsules and take it, and that's been shown to stimulate oxytocin. The more that you...
Yeah, I have heard of that.
Oh, I tell you, I'm a believer. I believe anything that anybody tells me when it comes to stuff like this. So if they say, "Oh my goodness, Dr. Morgan, I can't even tell you how good I feel and how rapidly I'm recovering from the pregnancy. I don't have postpartum depression this time." But in the real world, here's what you do to stimulate your pituitary to start releasing oxytocin. We'll go back to the pituitary in just a second. But the more that you're hugged and that you're touched and you're kissed and caressed on a level that you like, I don't know that I would enjoy, a grizzly bear putting me in a bear hug right now. It might be a little terrifying, not comforting. Or if Sasquatch grabbed me, that may be a little terrifying, not so much loving. But the more that you're hugged and kissed and caressed, and sometimes I think it doesn't make a difference if you're the one doing all the hugging and touching and caressing, I think it's good, and I think it's good to receive too. So when you do that, you're training your pituitary to make more oxytocin. There aren't many things in the human body that gets rid of cortisol, and that's what you want to do right now. Like oxytocin does. It's phenomenal. So,
well, since I'm single and the only thing really I you know, is besides my family, my mom, my kids, or my dogs. On a daily basis, I give love to my dogs and they give it back.
What do you think about going to Home Depot and just hugging strange men that are walking out of the construction area? Oh, okay. We're going to have to stick with the dogs and kids and maybe people at church. You can hug them, right?
Yes, that too, yes.
So here's the other thing that I want to look at. I know that the Indian herb ashwagandha can be very, very effective. Sometimes it's called withania, so either potato, potato, ashwagandha, withania. Mm-hmm. That can be very, very helpful in helping to down-regulate the production of cortisol. For some people... I'll use, I don't know if I can say that on the radio, that people may raise their eyebrow, but you can get animal extracts called glandulars that contain these components. If I said what they were, I'd probably get, my other four listeners would probably turn me off. But I'm telling you the truth. Going back to the liver for a second. Sometimes the liver just needs a legitimate rest. It just really does. And I am a firm believer that you can conquer a lot of issues with the body just through fasting. And one of the easiest ways to fast this time of year, you're not going to get any better than this time of year, is a watermelon fast. And so when you're trying to rejuvenate the liver, you just want to kind of bring it back up to speed where it's running on all eight cylinders instead of just one. But a three-day watermelon fast sometimes can just be a major home run. Or if you don't want to do that, maybe just one day of a watermelon fast. Drink all the water you want.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of a person overdosing on watermelon?
No. And I do juice fasts occasionally, and I do coffee enemas every week.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're trying to help the liver.
Surprisingly, on my lab work, all my lipids were good. They were in a good range, and my fasting glucose that morning was 68.
And that's a great number.
So it was really odd. Yeah.
Well, what does it usually do?
A1C.
Well, but I believe it. I mean, A1C is a very, very accurate marker to look at about a three-month average on what your glucose levels are. So, yeah, you've got that one snapshot in time that your glucose was at 68, but I would still believe the other numbers. So it takes a while to work that progesterone out of the body. But I'm almost positive your body is converting it downstream into cortisol. Have you ever heard of B vitamins?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I really don't know how many real B vitamins there are, but I'm just going to say there's probably 45. And if you ask me to make an intelligent description of each one of them, I cannot do that. I might could intelligently tell you about 6 to 12 of them or 20 of them, but I don't know that I could tell you about the other 20 because there's not much known. And so these are compounds. Yeah. These are water-soluble vitamins that are made by beneficial bacteria in your gut. They're found in foods that we would eat. So when a person eats calf liver, like liver and onions, you're probably legitimately getting all 45 B vitamins. You just are. If you like nutritional yeast, you're probably getting about 20 of them right there, which I think is a lot better than anything you can find in the health food store. But B vitamins, they play an extremely important role in improving how your liver is able to detoxify. So in a roundabout way, every day that you take the bioidentical hormones, your liver has got to work efficiently at kicking that stuff out, because if your liver doesn't do it, your body has no choice. It's going to convert the progesterone into cortisol, and cortisol is going to start breaking down your muscles over time. That's one of the reasons why chronic stress is so devastating to the female body. It just can rip you to shreds. So B vitamins.
Yeah, and being a single woman, it pretty goes along with being a single woman. You know, you're supporting yourself and all that kind of thing, so that's probably not going to go away a whole lot.
Would you
even though I'm a nurse?
Well, I know, but would you say though that you have your own unique set of challenges and difficulties that you have to contend with every day?
Oh yeah, I mean
it's kind of tough doing everything all by yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
That was kind of a dumb statement
for
me to
it.
Make it's obvious. Yeah, well, I appreciate you for having a strong force of will. Let me give you two or three ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you having hot flashes at all?
Yes.
Do you have any?
Insomnia.
Okay. Well,
those are the two main things.
Well, that tells me there's high levels of cortisol right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really against my suggestion to go for a walk in the forest and hug Bigfoot? Is that... You really won't do that?
Yes, I'm gonna. No.
Are you a dog person or a cat person or both?
I'm dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
I'm allergic to cats. Actually, I have two pit bulls. Surprisingly.
Well, I sure didn't expect that, but I bet you they're great dogs, aren't they?
They are. They are the most loving dogs I've ever had. It's just. They're amazing.
Well, the one that I barely escaped the other day, I can still feel his hot breath on my ankles. I'm telling you, that was the closest call that I have had with a pit bull in a long time. Now, see, I'm really calm right now. I'm pretty chilled out
and
relaxed.
Was that true?
Oh, yes. And you want me to tell you the story?
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
I was riding my bicycle, minding my own business, and the bicycle has more than one speed. And I wasn't thinking about what gear I should be in if I had to run for my life, so I think I had it in one of those higher gears, and all I want you to think about is when I would pedal, the pedals would go real, real slow. It's made for more. I probably hadn't a gear that I should be going 25 miles an hour. And so out of the corner of my eye, I hear this chain clank, and I'm going, great, there's a pit bull running off the front porch of a house. And I just fully expected at any point that chain was going to catch and restrain the dog, but it never did. I said, oh, great, I am dead meat. And so I take off pumping my pedals as hard as I can, but it looks like I'm in slow motion. This would not have been a real pretty video of me either. Because he was on top of me, and the owner came out of the house. Of course, the owner came out without a shirt on. Anyway, there was some ink markings on his arm. He probably went to a festival.
Oh,
anyway,
gosh.
But anyway, so he's running out.
Yeah, I don't have any of that.
He's screaming. I know you don't. I wasn't suggesting. But anyway, I had no choice. The dog was on top of me, so I cut my wheels hard to the right just because he came up on the left. And then I blocked him that way, and so I was just doing zigzags back and forth. Every time he'd go one way, I went the other way. And I finally, I think it was adrenaline. Yeah, adrenaline is good. I like adrenaline. Saved my life. But I can feel his hot breath and saliva and slobber on my ankles. I will tell you this. I did call the police. Because if that that had been like a child on a bicycle, they would have been dead. I was just trying to figure out, what am I going to do to block this dog from eating me? And I thought, if I hit the ground, I'm just going to have to use my bicycle to create a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my story.
Yeah, mine are nothing like that.
No, no. Yours are yours don't carry around 20-pound chains either, do they?
My dogs have never been on chains, and that's where people go wrong. That's what makes them mean. So
if you
got to have a yard.
If you consider herbs like ashwagandha, withania, they have been shown to improve cortisol levels or help them to get lower. I think there's one that I might consider also. It's called Shizandra. Sometimes when you're trying to get rid of excess cortisol and adrenaline, it would just be very, very wise to consider the elements or the minerals, magnesium. I think zinc plays a role with this also, but probably magnesium and potassium play the greatest role in helping to downregulate. Vitamin C has been shown over and over and over again to help efficiently remove too much cortisol from the body.
I take those every night.
Good. Don't stop doing that. Can I tell you the things that may have a possibility? I'm not saying they will work, but the herb called Don Quai, Shatavari, Shizandra. Shizandra sounds like a woman's name almost, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You probably work with a Shizandra, don't you?
No, not right now.
Okay, all right, not currently.
I work with a Lametris.
Lametris, okay. Well, you know what? I like unique names, and that's unique. But Shizandra, it has a good effect upon the female liver also. So you've got natural B vitamins, you've got vitamin C. I would encourage one thing that I might try. And I know this may sound like, where's this coming from? But sometimes I find wheat germ oil is the greatest thing since sliced bread. No pun intended. Okay. Because wheat germ oil provides that good hormone substrate to help your body make what it needs. And there is a world of difference between your glands and tissues making adequate hormones and producing and getting rid of them efficiently than trying to take them. I don't know that
menopause...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, but menopause is a natural thing that women go through, and so their hormones are naturally supposed to go down.
Yes, but, you're not supposed to be in the fertility. And you're right. That's just that's a natural mechanism. But the adrenal glands, they can do almost any hormone production that you need if they're called upon. If your ovaries completely stop working, the adrenals theoretically can work. But one of the issues is you've got to control insulin. You've got to control cortisol. And so it may be that you have, and don't take what I'm saying the wrong way, we may find that your pituitary is just a little bit sluggish, and we may find that your adrenals are really, really sluggish. They're just not able to work as efficiently as you want. So if we work on those, you may tell me all these symptoms disappear and go away, which would be good.
Okay. And then tribulus with the two, because I lift weights, mm-hmm. and I'm having trouble building muscle, unlike I used to be able to build it really easily.
Depending on the type of exercise you use, if your body has a hair trigger for producing cortisol, there are some forms of exercise like high intensity and CrossFit. They might actually momentarily make your cortisol levels just go through the roof way, way, way too high.
Yeah, I do weightlifting.
Right. Well, I was just trying to give you an idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I really, really appreciate all this information.
I hope it helps.
Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome. You have a great day, ma'am. I appreciate you for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. Sometimes I find that when women go from low iodine to better amounts of it, they do better. Good morning. Thanks for your phone call today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
I am calling. Radio off. I'm calling because my girlfriend has a condition called granuloma annular.
What did you say? Granuloma?
That may be it. Granuloma and amular.
Well, how do you spell the second word?
Amulare. She was trying to spell it for me.
Sounds like amulare or something.
Amulare.
Well, I don't know that. I'm just talking.
No, it's amulare.
Well, how does this affect her, or where is its manifestation?
Well, it's all over her skin. It starts out as a little pimple, and then it breaks out as a ringworm type of.
But it's skin. Not ringworm. It's just a granuloma. Okay. Well, my curious question would be, what's going on the inside that's causing this external manifestation on the skin?
Okay.
I don't know anything about that, to be honest with you. All I would have to do is look it up, but that's probably the way that I'm wired. I want to be a seeker. I want to ask questions and learn information. But there's got to be something going on the inside. So if I can just borrow from the last phone call, your liver is the organ that keeps your skin under constant surveillance all day long. A long time ago, really, really smart doctors used to call the skin your third kidney. You know, most people are born with two kidneys. Some people have eight. When I was in college back in the 80s, we had a cadaver that had eight kidneys. That's probably a waste of your time for me to bring that up. But your kidneys and your liver, what do? They're constantly filtering impurities and toxins that could harm you. And they want to kick them out, so they're your major organs of detoxification. So anything that happens to the skin, I've got to believe either it's due to toxicity or infection, but some toxic reaction, more than what the body can handle.
Okay.
I have a story for you, though.
Well, go with it.
All these pictures were in black and white. I bought a textbook that comes from Switzerland, and I was reading it the other day, and they were talking about this woman that had one of the worst skin conditions that's ever been witnessed before, and her pictures were in black and white. So I couldn't really tell how bad it was because, you know, I can see in color, and you can too. Not everybody can. Mm-hmm. But I was reading her story, and anyway, the punchline is she had a chronic infection in one of her teeth, and once a tooth infection was removed, all her skin cleared up.
Wow.
And so there's got in a physician a long time ago said a doctor's main role or a physician's main role is removing any obstacle to healing. But if you don't believe that, then hey, if you've got granuloma amulare or whatever it's called, then giving massive doses of chemotherapy sounds like a good plan. We've got to suppress it. Well, what if the doctor just wants to give massive amounts of prednisone or steroids or a Medrol dose pack? Mm. Have they recommended things like that?
No. She says that I asked, what are they giving you? And she says nothing.
Well, I wonder, is she in really, really good health right now?
Yes. She actually taking small courses since I'm doing good on my weight. I am minimizing my food intake, but it may be the food that she's been taking. Not really.
Well,
sure.
There has to be some way to solve the mystery, and quite often when I examine a person, I'm looking for the weak link in the chain. But I'm telling you right now, if it's the skin, I have to look at the gut. And, of course, I'm kind of including the liver in the gut, and maybe the kidneys are in there also, but there's some reaction. If there is a skin condition, then there's some reaction going on. Can I tell you the worst skin conditions I've ever seen before? They were always due to antibiotics. Always. When people bring in their cell phones and they show me pictures of them in intensive care, it's almost always an antibiotic reaction. Almost always. And all I'm saying is, that's a prescription drug, but it can have a very negative, deleterious effect for those people that it has a negative effect on.
So, well, I like what you said about the watermelon.
Well, that's easy to do. Yeah, give your body a rest. I mean, how many times could you read articles did you hear what I said? You could read a passage of scripture, sorry, I kind of butchered that, where people were so distressed they didn't know what to do, but they fasted. I think I read the story to the kids the other day about Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. Well, it said the king, he did not eat that night. He fasted all night long. He wouldn't accept entertainment or food or wine. Well, he was very distressed because evidently he loved and cared about Daniel. He was tricked into signing that law. But to make a long story short, God protected him. So fasting is probably really, really good. They probably did not send Daniel into the lion's den with a sack lunch, did they? I can imagine all the people that had tremendous jealousy concerning Daniel in the Babylonian kingdom said, why don't we give him 2 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and a turkey and a roast? No! They wanted those lions to rip him to shreds. They wanted his job, probably. But anyway, but fasting is really good because what you do is you give the body a rest. But if I were given a guess right now, and that's all I can do, is I would say there's either a glitch within her liver or there's a glitch somewhere in the gut. And, of course, from the start of your digestive tract all from one end to the other, just somewhere in there, that narrows it down. But there's got to be either some type of allergic reaction or autoimmune reaction or toxicity or infection. And so we have to identify which one of those it is. But when you do a watermelon fast, you may take care of 2 or 3 of those. So what if she fasts on watermelon for 3 days? I don't think I've ever seen one human being overeat watermelon.
Yeah.
What would happen if I put 3 large slices of watermelon in front of you? Could you eat them all?
Oh, yes.
But would you want more after that? You probably wouldn't. You'd probably be full. You're telling me you're
done. I'll probably be good later on. I can do that fast. After lunch and dinner.
Well, you know what? Sometimes I really, when I ask people questions like, so you're telling me that you only got better after you had the flu, right? And they go, yeah, that's where all my fortunes turned for the better. Well, how much did you eat when you were sick in bed? Well, I didn't eat anything for 4 days.
I think.
Yeah, but that's what a flu sometimes is, or a bad, bad cold. I'm not saying it's a bad plan to get a cold. I can tell you this. If you start looking at scientific literature on who has the most cancer, well, guess what? It's the people that never get colds or never get the flu or never get sick.
Mm.
So there may be a benefit to getting a cold twice a year and being in bed for a day or two because you may fast, right?
Yes. And I like what you said about the cortisol, because I have MS, and when they told me that my nerves were being attacked, and they put me on Actar gel, which increases my cortisol.
Wow.
Yes. And they said that will protect your nerves from the antibodies.
Yeah, so much for sleeping that night.
And so I was on that for like 6 months, and I found myself getting sluggish and sluggish and sluggish.
Well, what was your sleep like?
I wouldn't really sleep.
Well, doesn't that kind of drive a person bonkers if you can't sleep?
Exactly.
You know what I heard last week on a radio program? A man that was in charge of interrogating known terrorists in Guantanamo, Cuba. He was saying they had to stop doing sleep deprivation because they had a few of the terrorists die after 12 days of no sleep. Are you kidding me? Seriously, I mean, if a person does not sleep, do you see how devastating that can be to your health? It could kill you.
Yes, and I feel for my girlfriend that I know that she said, I don't have a problem going to sleep, I have a problem staying asleep.
You don't
and
know.
And I feel so bad for her.
Well, and yeah, I do too. But we've got to find some solution, and I know what she wants. She wants to be, all she wants to know is, what is causing this? I got it. You're giving me you're going to give me these medications probably at some point, but she wants to know what is at the root cause of the problem and what can she do to help herself. And so that's what I would rather focus the energy on. So anything that affects the skin, you have no choice. I mean, does she take? This is not meant to be negative, but how old is she?
She's in her late 30s or early 40s.
Is there any chance she's taking birth control pills?
I really don't know.
Because there's not many drugs that can totally mess up all the microbes and the bacteria in the body like birth control pills do. Oh, my word. It's not just antibiotics. I'd probably say birth control pills are number two. See, if a woman goes to the hospital with a blood clot, I mean, I have no choice but to think, what hormones has she been put on? So even the lady that called before about giving bioidentical hormones, I don't know that you really see a lot of women that have deep blood clots in their legs or their lungs or their heart or have strokes unless they're on birth control pills or hormones. I mean, because they're just incredibly disruptive to the body. Huge burden on the liver, if you ask me.
Wow.
So you could always ask that question because
I will.
When you start having bad reactions on the skin, at the very least, we just need to find out, is she coming in contact with any type of pharmaceutically designed chemical that she's putting in her body?
Okay.
They can call it bioidentical all day long. That's fine if they want to use that term. I don't have to agree with that, though. It's not natural.
Well, I'll be sure to ask about that.
You know, a person could be miserable. They could be depressed. They could be dissatisfied with their life. And they could drink a quart of whiskey, and they would not have any problems at all, technically, if you ask them. Seriously. But are they better off by escaping their stress, by numbing their mind and their brain and their emotions?
Yeah.
No. I mean, so you can technically, if hormones are really disrupted, you can flood a person with mega doses of hormones, and you make them feel better short term, but you can also cause them to have a stroke. And you can cause them to have a blood clot, and you can make them have a heart attack, and you can call it,
you can get to the root cause.
Yeah, or you can do that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it takes discipline because even the idea, if I were to, let's just say I have 10 people in front of me and I give them my very best sales pitch on a watermelon fast or, you know, something like that, not every one of them is going to say, hey, I love the idea of that. The only people that I ever had that do these things are the ones that come in saying, I'm sick of feeling this way, I hate it, I want to do this. And they just, there's no argument, they just do it, and they're disciplined. Because they see value in being a great mom or a great father or a grandparent.
There you go.
So there's a trade-off to everything.
You can't do that if you're not right.
Well, and the more right we are, the more you're going to be able to spend your time and your energy doing things you want to do.
Better quality. Oh. Yes.
Well, if you knew for a fact that you were going to live to be 102 years of age, would you like to have your mental faculties and be able to drive your own car and go to the store and get your own groceries? At 102, you're going to be taking food to your neighbors that are 70 and they're sick and infirmed, right?
Would love to.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yes, it would.
Yeah, so I don't know that aging is that big of a deal if your body can serve you reasonably well. And the only way that's going to happen is if you take steps right now to make sure that's going to be the case.
Absolutely.
You can't take methamphetamines or crystal meth for 3 years straight and not sleep and expect your body to be in good working order. You can burn the candle so hot that you don't have a body by the time you're 35 years of age. That's real sad, but it's true.
Wow.
What I'll do is, I will definitely do a literature search on granuloma, amulare, or whatever it's called.
Yes.
I think that's an Italian word, amulare. I just made that amulare. Up. I don't really know that. Sounds like amore.
She didn't know how to spell it. That's okay. Granuloma.
No, I will look it up and I'll look at pictures, but that would be very intriguing to me. That here's the fun for me. What's behind all this? What can we discover? Maybe she has a hidden food allergy and doesn't know it. Maybe she has a low-grade infection like the woman from Germany that I told you about that had suffered for 30 years with horrible skin conditions. You know what I read this morning? You've heard of Cuba, haven't you?
Yes.
They've tried using homeopathic vaccines for leprosy very, very successfully. So they take the germ that causes leprosy, and they dilute it 1,000 times, and they give it to people, and it protects them against leprosy. Well, the last time I checked, leprosy would be one pretty bad skin condition.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, do not go on Google or YouTube and type in, you can talk to Siri. Siri, can you show me pictures of leprosy? They are not going to be pretty.
No. But I thank you.
Yes, I thank you for...
Now, how can I get back with you on this information that you're going to research whenever you research
it? I'll just read to you on the radio.
Okay.
Unless you desire something else. But right now, that'll be just a simple thing that I can do.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Folks, you've got no choice. If you've got something coming up on the skin, it's okay to say, well, when was the last time that I didn't have this problem? And I'm not saying it's always as simple as cause and effect or A plus B equals C, but I would say for the most part, most people know where their turning point was, and they'd say, hey, in April I didn't have this, but now I do. Well, what happened? Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Morning, sir.
How are you?
Got a lot of questions.
Turn your radio down, please, and then I'll answer them. Or your TV.
My son's laptop.
Gotcha.
Is that better?
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
Had a little incident that kind of scared me to death. All of a sudden, I had a headache, and had floaters in my left eye, and my right eye had like a migraine off to the right hand side.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the, and my reading went away. It's hard to read.
Well, a migraine could do that though.
So I go to the. I call the optometrist. The optometrist has me come in, and I ask them if I should be seeing an ophthalmologist. They said, no, we can handle it. So they go in and they diluted the eye. Diluted? Is that what I'm looking for?
Dilated.
They dilated the eyes, and couldn't really find anything. They thought maybe I had a detached retina. Because I had like flashes of light.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea.
Anyway, they looked in there and looked in there and looked in there, and they could find nothing after extensive drops in the eyes. So they said, okay, come back in a month, and we'll do this thing again. But yet. My vision, I'm having problems reading. My reading ability has kind of gone away.
You mean just all of a sudden?
Yes, since this problem, it's kind of like when I look down, I still have to the right. If I look down and to the right, I still have a problem of being able to read.
But you don't have any macular degeneration or cataracts or glaucoma?
They check for glaucoma and macular and there's no redness for macular degeneration.
When somebody has a migraine headache, you can have so much inflammation of the portions of the neurology that can put pressure on those nerves, and it can definitely cause that. This is only an idea. You take it with a grain of salt. You do what you want with it. I'm not recommending that you do this, but some people will put drops of castor oil directly into their eye.
Okay.
And see, I know it can't be problematic. Number one, people have done it for hundreds of years. Probably thousands, if I knew the truth of it. Number next, there's a drug for dry eyes called Restasis. Guess what it has in it? It has castor oil. Well, if they make a prescription drug that contains castor oil, well, then I can't be a total nut job by recommending it. But by applying castor oil, that's one technique for trying to increase circulation to your eye or relieve some of the debris a bit. There might be one or two things that I would tell you off the air, because if certain individuals heard me say this, they're going to have a cow. But castor oil, give it a shot. Put it in there very frequently. Another thing that you could try very, very simply to see if it helps is a drop of what's called colloidal silver. And you don't have to use a high concentration. It could be at 10 parts per million.
I have colloidal silver here.
A lady the other day with a horrible eye problem that was plaguing her would just take white distilled vinegar on a cotton ball and wipe it over on the outside of her eye. I'm not telling you to do that. I would never do that. I'm not recommending the castor oil. I'm just telling you what people do. Some people are crazy. They put lemon juice in their eye. I would never recommend that. But you probably need to start putting hot compresses on your eye to try to greatly increase circulation. There's always very advantageous to increase circulation to any part of the body that you want to heal. And I know this is a ridiculous analogy, but if somebody has gangrene or their foot and they have to cut the foot off, do you think that's too much circulation, or is that not enough circulation? No, it's not enough. And the eyes, they require an incredible amount of oxygen, so you can try moist, gentle hot packs over your eyes. Not too hot. I think if we get it just a hair under 300 degrees Fahrenheit, that'll probably be fine. I'm joking about that. I'm just talking about a warm compress, a warm, moist compress. But castor oil can be a godsend. And the other thing is, just like I told the lady earlier, a watermelon fast. And see, watermelon has, carotenoid called astaxanthin or xanthine. I think it's found in high concentrations in a watermelon. They probably don't sell watermelons in California, do they?
They sell a lot of things in California, but including watermelons.
What does a watermelon cost in California?
Like $3 for a small one.
Oh, well, that's cheap enough. They probably grow them like crazy there, don't they?
I guess they do. I have trouble finding yellow ones, though.
Well, I don't think I've seen one either this year. I've just seen the red grapeland watermelons. So you can do those things, but if you give your body a rest, you just never underestimate what the body can do when you fast. The fastest unburdening of waste and debris in the eyes is during fasting. There is I can tell you what I would do if it were me. There is a product made by Standard Process called AC Carbamide. Oh boy, I'd be taking that right now.
AC Carbamide.
AC Carbamide.
Could you spell it?
Well, I tell you what. Here's what I want you to do, if you're willing. If you'll call my office and leave your number, I'll tell you how to get that. Okay.
Okay. Does Standard Process do that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you exactly how to get it. But it'd be a bit lengthy, because I think I only have exactly 10 seconds left in the program right now. So I can't. But if you'll just call my office, and you know my number, don't you?
Yes, sir, I certainly do.
Well, give me a call, and I'll tell you how to do that, okay?
Okay, doc.
All right, thanks for your phone call. Have a good day, and God bless you.
God bless you, sir.
Thanks.